welcome everyone to today's podcast. What I thought I'd talk about today is researching the perfect deal. Now, this actually came up because I'm doing some prep work for the big super conference I've got on this weekend. It's the I Love Real Estate Super Conference, and this is the big party of the year. It's going to be so much fun. We have students coming in to tell us what they did and how they did it and how long it took and how much money they made. And I always find stories like that very inspirational, because what it does is it shows people, everybody, me included, you know, step by step, what people can do and how long things took and how you can shortcut things and make more money. And it really is it's really an exercise in relativity. You know, what kind of deals produce what kind of results in what time span? And I think that's half the battle for a lot of people. You know, what could you expect from doing a renovation? What could you expect from doing a subdivision? What can you expect from doing a development deal? How long? How much money? And even there's a lot to be learned from the obstacles that people go through and the trials and tribulations that they find along the way. They're the sort of things that you just can't learn from a book. You've got to get out there and start doing things to be able to work out how to get around things, because they'll always come up. I don't think anybody should go into real estate and expect it to be an easy ride with absolutely no problems along the way. I think being a successful real estate investor is about being a successful problem solver. But anyway, I want to talk about researching the perfect deal, because as I say, I was doing the prep work for the weekend, and one of the sessions that I'm doing for the weekend is my best picks for 2017. And I thought it'd be really cool to share just one of them with you on the podcast. And the one that I've chosen to share with you is 2 + 1 = $100,000. And you go, what? 2 + 1 = $100,000. What on earth are you talking about? Well, what I'm talking about here is taking a 2-bedroom property and turning it into a 3-bedroom property. And typically when you do that, you end up with an uplift of around $100,000. Now, it doesn't take $100,000 to build a room or extend a room, or it certainly doesn't cost $100,000 to go in and reconfigure the internals of a property to create another room. You know, there's a lot of buildings these days that are very, very inefficient in their use of space. You know, they're really something that you need to have a bit of an idea about design to be able to see through perhaps what's sitting there in front of you. So I want to talk about this particular strategy, 2 + 1 = $100,000. And in particular, I thought it'd be really cool to introduce you to my daughter. Now, her name is Samantha, and she's been working with me alongside, you know, doing the properties and accounts and everything else since she was about 10. I think I had you in here doing the MYOB accounts, didn't I, darling?
Yes, that sounds about right.
Now, she's my right-hand girl at the moment, because she's helping me a lot with a lot of the property things, and she's started her own property portfolio as well. This weekend, one of the things that we're doing is I'm giving the prizes away for the Property Games kids. Now, I don't know whether you know or not, but about 18 months ago, I took on, I was supposed to be 5 kids, but I've ended up with 6 kids. And when I say kids, they were aged between 18 and 22, I think they had to be at the time. Mm-hmm. And Samantha was one of them. And this weekend we're having a show and tell. What have they done in the 18 months? What deals have they been able to get into? What have they learned? You know, what growing up's happened over that space of time? And you might think, well, you know, Samantha's got a little bit of an advantage. Well, maybe so, but it's actually a bit of a disadvantage too sometimes, because people expect a lot more of you, don't they?
Yes. Yes, they do indeed.
So I've had Samantha, as I said, working with me for some time researching deals. And when I said to her, look, I want to look at properties where we can turn them from a 2-bedroom into a 3-bedroom. And I said, I don't care whether they're Sydney, Melbourne or Brisbane. Can you get out and find me some deals that match that criteria? Now, Samantha, you, in your research, because obviously I was, you know, I'll give you a bit of guidelines. I was actually in Vietnam doing all of this, I might add. So we were just working on Skype. But when we were looking at suburbs, realistically, this works best in that inner middle rim, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. Just within 10 or so Ks from the CBD.
Yeah, 10 to 15.
10 to 15.
So tell me, in those suburbs where we were looking at this sort of model, what are some of the things that you think were important in that middle rim? Pricing?
Yes, pricing, particularly when you're buying. You obviously don't want to pay too much when you're just buying the initial unrenovated house, because you do make your money where you buy. So pricing is very important. And you also, obviously the research, you need to know that you're putting in the money and you're going to get the benefits in the end by adding this extra bedroom. So you've got to be assured of that.
Okay, so looking at finding that information out, what did you do?
Okay, well, first of all, there are a lot of programs out there that can give you sort of a market analysis for your chosen suburb. Basically, you want to, first of all, find out what the two bedrooms are selling for, unrenovated two bedrooms. Sorry. Yeah, so you want to first of all find out what the unrenovated two bedrooms are selling for, making sure it's not too high and it's not overinflated.
And how do you do that?
Well, I personally use a program called Price Finder. You can pick a suburb in there, type in the bedrooms that you want to search, and it'll bring up all the recently sold properties in that area within your criteria. It'll also show you what's for sale. It'll show you what's for rent. Not really relevant, but it does have a lot of capabilities in the comparative marketing analysis that you can do.
So looking at other programs, we've got RP Data does very similar things.
Yep.
And Investar is hugely has a big advantage in that respect too, because with Investar, you can put in a lot of other keyword searches that the other programs don't have.
Yeah, it's definitely a more complex search engine than Price Finder and RP Data, which is really helpful when you're doing investing.
Yep. Okay, so you were looking at two bedrooms unrenovated.
Yeah, so you do have to go through and click on the photos of each to analyze whether they are unrenovated or not. Obviously, these agents are picking the best photo for the cover image, so which is going to show up when you're doing your research. You need to go through and make sure that it's not renovated when it is unrenovated, whatever.
Yeah. Okay, so we clicked through those. So we're looking at two bedrooms unrenovated, to three bedrooms unrenovated.
Yep.
And then the final search is three bedrooms renovated.
Yeah. So the purpose of doing the three bedroom unrenovated is to make sure that you're not buying a two bedroom for the same price you could be buying a three bedroom, when you could just do a quick little renovation and sell it for the same price that the three bedroom renovated are selling for.
Mm. Okay. So I gave you this job to do while I was in Vietnam, and it took you about half a day?
Yeah, half a day for each suburb.
Half a day for each.
Oh, yeah, no, half a day in total.
Half a day in total?
Mm-hmm.
So in doing that, you were looking at Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne.
Yes.
Now, obviously, for everyone listening out there, kids this age are a little quicker at this than most of us. So, if you're not particularly skilled in using programs and doing this kind of research, understand it'll take you longer. But the thing is, it's not a race. This is something that you can do anytime. You can do it at night. You can do it, if you've only got half an hour, you can jump on there and do a bit of research, because it's important to have a game plan. You know, the last thing you want to do is just sit down on the computer and look for deals. That's the worst thing you can do, because you'll be jumping around all over the place. What you have to do is you have to go in with a fixed model in mind. What's my desired outcome? And when you know exactly what you're looking for, guess what? You find it. So that's really important. And obviously, with Samantha, we said, okay, well, this is what we want. This is what I want to show. And now find me deals that meet that, and, potentially go out there and buy. So this was one of my picks for 2017. And typically that uplift, particularly when you were looking at that middle to inner rim, was around that $100,000 for unrenovated to unrenovated.
Yep.
Now, obviously, there's also an uplift when you start talking about adding on a renovation, which is really what I wanted to show because, you know, on some of the examples that you sent through to me, the uplift was $300,000-$400,000.
Yeah, quite significant.
Yeah. And you know, when we're looking at low-end suburbs, the $100,000 might not be quite the $100,000. When you're looking at that middle rim kind of suburb, the uplift is definitely the $100,000 and sometimes more. You see, this is something when you're looking at suburbs and where to do manufactured growth strategies, particularly renovation. A renovation costs the same amount whether you're in whoop-whoop Nowhereville or whether you're in a prime suburb. But the percentage uplift is much greater for a better suburb. And I think that's something you need to keep very much in mind.
Yeah, there's no point spending money on a nice glass splashback if it's not going to meet the market and meet what the buyers in that area are going to need because it's not going to give you any extra money.
So let's talk about that because one of the things I asked you to do was to look at the quality of fittings.
Mm-hmm.
How did you go through and work out what sells at a higher price and what doesn't and all of those sort of things?
Well, personally, I do my search on what's recently sold, and I like to put all the information from that search into an Excel document,
mm-hmm.
which has got the price, the date it sold, the address, how long it sat on the market, which is also a really good indicator to what the market, that area demands, what the buyers in that area want. If it obviously sits on there for longer than 30 days, it's not a hot property in the area. Buyers don't particularly jump on that. And then you've also got the number of bedrooms, whether it's renovated, unrenovated, put in a photo so you can remember the property, block size. So I have that all in my Excel document, get as much information as I can, and then I can go through and work out where are the opportunities, basically.
And even colour schemes and mm-hmm. what type of bench tops and kitchen tiles and things like that.
Yeah, you'll find it's quite obvious when you see all the ones that are attracting a higher price. They've all got this modern design, high quality fixtures and fittings. So you can understand that if that's the target if that's what you're chasing, then you have to meet these fixtures and fittings sort of benchmark.
Yeah, that's right. The other thing I think is very important is to look at sold properties.
Yes. I only particularly look at sold, basically because there are a lot of, I don't bother looking at for sale or even bother looking at realestate.com or anything like that where they're for sale because there are a lot of owners out there that have unrealistic price expectations. Same with agents. So it's not really a good indicator of what's the actual market value of that property.
It's important when you're looking at finished products because, you know, a property that's nicely finished and nicely renovated, that's what people want to buy. You know, if you're trying to sell to an investor, they want return, they want something that they can make money on, they want a development side, those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
For most of the time, your target market is not going to be an investor. Even though we're all investors and we talk investment talk and we think like investors, you've got to understand that most people out there aren't investors. And what they want is a house to live in. And most people aren't renovators either. So what they want is they want the nicest possible home they can have that their money can afford.
Yep.
So there's a lot of tricks to the trade that you can implement to give a quality product. I'd actually like Samantha to talk about your renovation that you did in Brisbane recently.
Yep. So about July or so last year, I purchased a 21 square meter unit.
Which is tiny, I might add.
Yeah, very small. And it wasn't renovated. It was original condition. The building had been there for a while and I went in there and completely gutted it and renovated it. It was only a studio, so you only had bedroom, bathroom, a little kitchenette area. But because the space was so small, I really targeted sort of space-saving designs. The property was particularly aimed at students. So, you know, they don't have, most of them were immigration students, you know, overseas business students. They didn't have much furniture. They needed storage and they just needed a space that was close to the city, close to the uni, and that's basically what I aimed at. So I had a bed that folded out to a couch and folded back up into the wall. Little other trick-saving, space-saving designs, like an ironing board that pulled out from the wall, that kind of stuff. And I did target it at, what would you say? I did have a budget, and I did stick within that budget mostly, but it was a modern, I did like the modern design, and that's what I was targeting, because that's what the students wanted in there. They wanted a nice, clean 21 square meter unit that they could just come into, go walk to the shops, walk to the city, go to uni, and that's what I did.
Now, initially, the plan was to sell it, make some money, move on, get into the next deal. But of course, once it was finished, it was positive cash flow.
Yeah.
So why sell it?
Exactly. Yeah. It was about $3,000 positive a year. So we thought, why would I sell that? Why would not just let it sit there, tick along, make me money?
What it means is that you don't get quite the full amount of the, the equity that you made in it, because I had to refinance. You've still got to leave 20% in there. But that's still good money, and it'll still continue to grow, and it's a good yield, and it's positive cash flow, and all those sort of things. So keep it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So let's get back to the research then. The finishes are going to be important for the area, particularly when you're going from a two-bedroom to a three-bedroom, and then a three-bedroom to a renovated three-bedroom. That uplift is going to be significant. And remember, the more strategies you can stack on top of each other, the more money you're going to make. Now, why am I targeting two-bedders? There's not a lot of two-bedders around. In some of the regions that I got you to have a look at, Samantha, there weren't even any two-bedders, were there?
No. And remember, we're talking about two-bedroom houses, not units.
Yes.
So, yes, there was hardly any that were selling.
In some of the areas.
In some suburbs, yes. Yeah.
In others, they were quite prevalent. And I think that's something you've actually got to look for. Why didn't we target units? Well, it's much harder to add a bedroom in a unit. Sometimes it can be done if the floor plan is good enough to be able to make that happen, but it's not always possible. So that's why we didn't target units. We only targeted houses. Let's talk also about why didn't we say three-bedroom to four-bedroom or four-bedroom to five-bedroom? Does it give that much of an uplift? Well, the biggest uplift is two to three. 3 to 4 does have an uplift, but you've got to really pick your suburb. You've got to pick a suburb that is a family suburb, and a family suburb that is changing into an older suburb. So from a demographics perspective, and what we're looking for is, bigger families and things like that. Now, you're very good at being able to pull demographics off on suburbs and things like that, and work out, what type of things people are looking for. Because even with your unit, it was targeted specifically at the young single who was studying predominantly.
Exactly. Yep.
And that's what you targeted, and that's what you got, and you got a great positive cash flow. But when you're targeting from a 2 to a 3, typically what you're going to be buying is an old house that back in the 20s and 30s predominantly, the place was built, and that's what people lived in. A 2-bedroom, why would you want any more than 2 bedrooms? Whereas now, of course, we went through to the 80s in particular, where we had the McMansions and everything was a 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom, double lock-up garage. And we're still feeling the effects of that. We're still sort of having a lot more of the bigger housing. But what we're noticing, of course, is that, more space-saving efficiency is becoming more important. So being able to take something from a 2 to 3 really, really captures that small family unit. And we're typically 1.5 children at the moment. Mm-hmm. Is the Australian average for how many kids we're all going to have. I don't know how we have a 0.5 child, but anyway. But that gives us an opportunity then to capture the biggest part of that market. And that's why the uplift is so great. So when we're looking at these costs, your sales, the properties that have already been sold really have to be part of your key search. because that's the tell-all. And regardless of what things are listed for, what they sell for is actually what's important. And, you know, the discounting is also important, and days on the market. How do you get all that kind of information?
The programs that I mentioned earlier, they do have these sort of information. They also do suburb reports, which include your demographics. You get the average income for the area, average house prices, the family structure of the area, which is quite important, particularly if you're targeting these young families. You want to make sure that there are young families living in that area and there are young families that want to live in that area. So, yeah, these programs, they are immensely valuable, and they will aid you a lot in your research.
Hmm. Now, when you're looking at your end product and picking finishes and things like that, realistically it's going to be a matter of practice, because the more times you put in a kitchen and do tiling and bathrooms and painting and floor coverings and all of that kind of stuff, the better at it you're going to be. And the more easily you're going to be able to know that it's going to cost you X dollars to get from what that is to where you want it to be. Costings initially at least are going to be very important. Now, you mentioned, Samantha, before about doing Excel spreadsheets. I think that's absolutely par for the course. It has to be what you do, because when I'm doing research, it's important to have a research screen where you're looking for things specifically, and a capture screen where you're pulling that information across, because by the time you're 5 or 6 pages down the track, you're going to forget what you saw on the first page. So you need to be pulling that information across and then doing a complete analysis when you've got it all in front of you in one spot. So whether it be an Excel spreadsheet or whether it be a Word document or whatever it is you use, you need that capture document to be able to compare one to another. And even think, you talked about adding pictures. That's important too. So you can see what kind of house it was and the link to go back to it when you need to, and what finishes it had and all of those sort of things. So all of that demographics and days on the market, all of those types of things are very important to be able to reference back really quickly, which is why the data collection sheet is just has to be part of what you do. Now, you've been working with me for some time. You have files and all sorts of things. We used a very similar strategy recently to determine where there was a need for childcare centres and where there was a need for storage sheds.
Yes, exactly. So this, particularly for the child centres, this is where the demographic side of the research really came into play. You want to target these suburbs that have people between the age of 20 and 30 and 30 and 40.
Yep.
You know, the age where everyone's starting to have kids. They're obviously going to need somewhere to send their kids while they're at work. So you need to show that there's going to be a demand for a childcare centre. There's no point putting a childcare centre in an aged region where there's older demographic.
Mm. And this is something you need to keep on top of, because demographics change over time. As, older suburbs become, people sell them off or move on to retirement homes or whatever else, depending on the price point, depends on whether the young families can actually afford to be going in and buying those properties. If they're still having children and things like that, quite often you have to look at some of the perhaps lower demographic price point. But not always. It depends on where it is, what it is. Places like Sydney and Melbourne, the prices are high anyway. So, that is less important than it is for a place like Brisbane, we'll say, where there's a greater variety in pricings. But this whole process of collating and research really is the key. And it's, if you're sitting there and you think, oh, I'm going to find a property, and you get on to realestate.com or domain.com, and all you're doing is jumping around all over the place. You don't actually have a targeted approach to what you're looking for. And a targeted approach is very, very important. So to summarise, I think a number of thoughts can come out of this podcast. One, the more strategies you can add on to the one deal, the more money you're going to make. The biggest uplift or the biggest bang for your buck is going to be from a 2 to a 3 and then a renovator of a 3. And Samantha, you know, when you were looking around for these deals, you found quite a lot that were just straight renovators as well.
Yeah, exactly. Some of the suburbs that I was looking for the 2-bedroom and the 2-bedroom didn't actually exist. They weren't selling in that area. I was able to see, well, you can easily make $100,000 at least just from renovating these 3-bedroom property.
You know, it's important when she says we can make $100,000. That doesn't mean that the price was $100,000 more, because you remember, when you buy a property, you've got to pay stamp duty going in. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to pay for the renovation. You're going to pay sales commissions going out, and advertising and all, and holding costs in the middle. So you've got to have more than $100,000 uplift just to be able to make $100,000 profit. You know, you're probably talking more like $150,000 to $200,000 uplift. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's really what's important there. And to always look at the sold figures, the ones that have already sold, because that gives you an indication as to what the market is actually bearing, as opposed to what somebody hopes they can sell their property for. Discounting is very important, and what amounts actually get discounted down from list price to actual sale price. And then really having a very good handle on the fixtures, the finishings, what's expected, land size, even down to garden.
Exactly, yep.
So they're the types of things. Make sure you've always got 2 files open. So you've got a research screen and you've got a capture screen, mm-hmm. so that you can always go back and look at that information. I've been doing this for a lot of years, and it's really handy to go back to the same suburbs, the same houses, the same types of things, you know, that we were researching a year ago or 2 years ago, and just watch what's happening. You've really got to be that local expert.
Yeah. And get as much information as you can when you find these, when you generate these reports. You're going to spend an extra couple of seconds inputting that into your Excel spreadsheet. And I don't know, you may never use it, but the information's there. It's handy to just drag it all across. So at least you've got it, and at least you can refer back to it at a later stage.
And I think the other thing to remember is it's not all about hiding behind a computer. Mm. Picking up the phone and actually talking to a few agents is a good idea too.
Yeah. A lot of this research is done behind a computer, but you're not going to buy anything. You're not going to actually get a feel of the region unless you actually speak to an agent who's working there, or a resident, or... yeah, someone living there.
Who's actually breathing? That's a good idea, yeah. Not just a computer. You know, you're still young. You're, 21?
Yeah.
How do you feel about picking up the phone and talking to agents and things like that?
Yeah, well, when I first started, I did find it quite daunting, basically because I thought I didn't know what I was saying. They might think I'm stupid. They have no idea. Just a young girl trying to waste their time. But I think what's helped me is to write down what information you need to get, so that at least when you pick the phone up, even if you're a little nervous, if you become flustered or you get sidetracked, at least you can refer back to this list that you've written and make sure you do get all the information that you set out to get.
Very important. Good tip there. Okay, guys, well, that's it for today. I hope the podcast has been interesting. And it's great for me to be able to introduce my daughter Samantha to the team. And guys, we'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon on the next podcast. So watch out for that one. Talk to you soon, guys. Bye for now.